Accession number 5385, Reel 2.
Mr. Greenberg, Reel 2.
We had no idea where we were going, but we finished up in Cape Town after having sailed 500 miles south of the Cape before coming in to avoid Axis power subs. We arrived on December the 10th, and the view from the bay of Table Mountain was just splendid. We had December the 10th, we heard the news that the Repulse and the Prince of Wales had been sunk in the South China Seas. We were throwing coins to native boys in the harbour, you know, from over the side of the boat. And we were given 5 days' leave.
What type of impact did the news of the sinking of the Prince of Wales and Repulse make?
Nothing. Were hurt, but you see, we were under the impression, and the officers knew as well, we were destined for Persia to take up line of communication with the Russians. Just before we sailed into Cape Town, 2 or 3 days before Pearl Harbor occurred, and we didn't see any of the Yankee crew for a couple of days. I think they were rather taken aback and a bit rather ashamed. But when they surfaced, they said that there'd been an air raid on Tokyo, so they felt a bit better. Whether that was true or not, I couldn't say. After Cape Town, we sailed for India. In the meantime, the Mount Vernon, the USS Mount Vernon, carried the 53rd Brigade, complete with all its troops. And they were, and when Pearl Harbor occurred, and the Americans entered the war, Churchill, or Britain, diverted the 53rd Brigade from the rest of the convoy to go straight to Singapore. We didn't know at the time. We knew the boat wasn't where it was going, we didn't know. So they went to the Maldives Islands and they landed in Singapore on the 13th of January. And went into action in Johor, or Malaya, you know.
Was the voyage into Singapore an eventful for you, or were you attacked?
Yeah, I'm going to tell you. We could go to India first, in the American boat, the USS Leonard Wood. We went to Bombay. We arrived in the outside on the 28th of December. I had a day's leave on the 31st, and found it fascinating. The next day, I was in a party of 21 detailed to stay in Bombay while the rest of the field ambulance and everybody was sent to a military town called Ahmednagar in India. Ahmednagar. We spent just over 23 days in Calaba Barracks in Bombay, and we were doing guard duty on the docks. And then, towards the end of January, we were all taken to the harbour and we boarded the Empress of Asia. By the way, that was a transport that the RAF had walked off of because it was so dirty in Halifax, Nova Scotia, in 1941, in the summer of 41.
How did you discover that?
I knew that in England, and it's the same boat. So,
you mean had it been in the newspapers?
Yes,
in England?
Been in the newspapers in England, you know, and you go on the same boat, you know.
Was it dirty when you
yes,
were on?
Yes, had to be cleaned up.
In what way was it dirty?
It was all filthy. All had to be cleaned up. You know, the mess decks, everything was filthy. We sailed, and we had an escort of a Dutch flying boat, I think. That's all. No. There was us. There was the Felix Roussel. There was the Canterbury. About four boats going, carrying the remnants of the 18th Division, the two brigades of the division, you see, under Major General Beckwith Smith, who incidentally was a personal friend of King George VI. Because we were all presented to the King, inspected us before we left England in the Midlands. During the voyage, the crew robbed the canteens, came around selling stuff to us. And on February the 4th, we were between Sumatra and Banka Island, and we saw land on both sides.
Could I interrupt you at this point just to ask what you meant when you said that the crew were selling you stuff? Were they selling stuff they'd stolen from the canteen?
Yeah.
So they were selling you stuff that you should have had free?
I don't know whether we had to buy it or I don't know. But anyway, you see, we had our meals and we weren't concerned. We were young and you don't bother, you know. But February the 4th, about 12:30, 12:45, I go up on deck and I go forward, and there's a Bofa gun crew forward. And quite a few of us went, and all of a sudden, I found I was the only one there, except the Bofa gun crew. There was an attack by Japanese planes. We were led by the cruiser Exeter, and she was firing her guns at the... and so was the Felix Roussel, and so were our chaps. and I ran down into the middle of the transport. But the Liverpool Irish crew, it was a coal-burning vessel, they ran up. They were frightened. They ran up, and we had to go down and stoke the ship up. The Exeter's captain sent a message to say if we can't keep up with the convoy, he'll have to leave us. That was February the 4th, 1942.
Did you have to do the stoking yourself?
I didn't do it myself, but a lot of the boys had went down to do the stoking, yes.
Were they able to do it expertly?
That I can't say, but we did keep up. They were the crew went back afterwards when it was, you know, when the raid was over.
Had the stokers just panicked?
Panic, yeah. The February the 5th, around, the orders were given that everybody to be dressed with their kit to be at the stern of the ship. That was our lot, you know. And I was mess deck orderly that day, so I didn't dress. I had to stay down below, you see. At around 10 o'clock, there was a raid. And the message came through, it's our planes. About 11:30, there was another raid. And the Japs, they caught us. One bomb hit the hospital, went through the hit the hospital, one hit the engine room, and we were down below. The lights were shaking. The lights were shaking. And I grabbed a life jacket. I had a pair of gym shoes on me that weren't laced up, my specs, my tin hat, my false teeth, and perhaps there were four or five of us. We banging on the watertight door. Bang, 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 bang. And it was opened by one of our sergeants, Harry Spencer. He came from Barnsley. "What are you lads doing there? Come on, come." So we joined the others. And after a while, he said, "Everybody up, go up on deck." We start to go up on deck, and we heard a terrific noise. We all fell back. Apparently, it was the captain had given the order to lower the anchor, because it's a big, heavy chain, you know, that goes through. And then we went up again. And we got on deck. The whole of the superstructure was ablaze. The chief officer addressed us. He said, "Strong swimmers swim to the lighthouse, which is about 2 miles away. Others go down the rope ladders or down the ropes." He said, "You'll all get picked up." Well, when you look down on a 16,000-ton liner, you feel a bit frightened. But I went down the ladder and jumped about 12 feet into the water. I got to a raft, hung on the handles round a raft. Some of the crew got on the raft and we pushed them off. Eventually finished up with two of our drivers, one called Wally Haslam, came from Lancashire, he was 6 foot odd. Another one called Lou Galsworthy came from Penin Bucks. They both wanted to give up, and I said, "No, we'll get picked up. We had to avoid flying embers that were coming off the superstructure of the boat. And at 2:10, we were picked up by an Australian corvette called the Wonnalong. Wonnalong. I got the two to go on board, and they must have climbed up a ladder, and I didn't have the strength to climb up a rope ladder, so the sailors on the Wonnalong just pulled it up. It was quite, and I landed head first on the deck. Went into a wardroom, dried, towel around me. We had something to eat, something to drink. The doctor came, a naval doctor, he came around with rum or something. He says, "Come on, lads," he says. They used some language, you know, but I won't put on the tape. I often feel that the skipper had cleared his papers that day to sail back to Australia. If he'd have taken us back to Australia, I might never have been a prisoner of war. But we landed at the harbour in Singapore, and I landed with a towel around me, a pair of wet shorts over my arm, a pair of gym shoes that weren't laced up, still kept on my feet, my specs and my false teeth. That's how I lost everything I had on the boat. We were taken in trucks to Geylang village, and put in bungalows. Ordered to dig slit trenches in the gardens. The next day, half the Royal Army RASC personnel were detailed to go up the line. But I was driving. No, I wasn't called. So I remember being detailed by the colonel, who incidentally I took out to lunch in March this year. He lives in Australia now, Colonel Harvey. He was the medical corps colonel. He briefed me in his office, sat at an office, and the signal for a raid was a blast on a, you know, like the siren that we had here. And he said to me, I stood to attention in front of him. He said, "Greenberg, if you like, you can take shelter." I said, "No, sir, if you don't go, I don't go." And I went out with an orderly to pick up some wounded, which I did, and brought them back. I remember going through past Kluang Aerodrome, which was ablaze, and so you have to remember, everything happened in 10 days, from the 5th of Feb to the 15th.
What impression did you get of the condition of Singapore at the time, the condition of our forces on Singapore?
The morale was good, but it broke our General Beckwith Smith's heart, because his division was broken up somewhere in Malaya, you know, the 53rd Brigade, which was part of the 18th Division. There's three brigades in a division. And he sailed into Singapore with the 54th and the 55th, you see.
Who was this, sorry?
Major General Beckwith Smith. He died in Taiwan, you know, it was in Taiwan, what's known as Taiwan now. Yeah. He died in They took all the officers above a colonel away, and they're all taken to Formosa, you know, Formosa, in a camp. He died in the camp there. Whether he died in 42 or not, I don't know, but they went in 42. So those 10 days, I spent one day in an ammunition dump loading ammunition. I went, and the unit moved from Geylang to the municipal buildings on the Friday, I think. Yes, on the Friday. They moved to the municipal buildings, and that was their main dressing station, you see. On the Friday, I went out with three ambulances to former an advanced dressing station under one of the captains, Captain Main. And we came back on the Saturday. On the Saturday, I was out, and I remember seeing some of our boys in the Bukatima Road, in the slit in the malaria drains, which were very the malaria. Have you been to Singapore at all?
No, but I've been to the east.
You've been to the east. Well, you know, big malaria drains. They're concrete, and they take all the rain, heavy rainwater. Well, they were dry. There was no rain then. No rain all the time we were there, like during the action, and they were there. So I saw some of them, you know, and I said to them, "Have you seen Corporal Hunt?" And he said, "What, him? That yellow bastard?" See, there's a story. I don't want to talk about it, but anyway, I'll tell you a little later on, but only the good things. So I'd been out on the Saturday, been out all Saturday night. I came in the morning, and the colonel was on the steps, and he said, "I want you, Greenberg." So I want you to go to the B echelon of the 2nd CAMS. I said, "Where is it?" He told me. And I went. I had two Scotsmen. My second driver was Jock Turnbull, and the medical orderly was Jock Brown, and I was Jock Greenberg. but we went to the B echelon of the 2nd CAMS, and we found that they hadn't been fed for 2 days. And they were up at the line, which was up on the Adam Road, which was there's a road that goes right through Singapore called the Bukatima Road. And this, the Dunearn Road, runs parallel for 2 or 3 miles and stops. And it stops at a road like a T, called the Dunearn Road, called the Adam Road. And the line was just beyond that. You know, the Japs had got on the island a few days before. The Australians had let them on. But that be as it may. So I went to the B echelon, and they wanted me to take food. I said no. While I was there, a Chinese family, husband, wife, three children and a grandmother, were trying to walk along the road. They were trying to get into Singapore town, perhaps. And I asked them, and they said, so I said, look, you wait here. I'll come back and I'll take you into Singapore. So I eventually follow the little truck carrying food for the second cams, and I go up to their lines, and they haven't got any wounded. So I leave them. And on my way back to where their B echelon was, I picked up a couple of wounded, I was asked to. Jock Turnbull was busy on the roof of the wagon because they had little piggy buses in those days that ran like trolley buses, you know, and the wires had come down and I got caught in the turret of the ambulance. I came back, picked up the family, took them right into Singapore to the municipal buildings, and I forget what they said, and that was maybe about 12 o'clock, half past 12, on Sunday, February the 15th. I go in, and a lot of the lads are there, some are cowering, some are, you know, I saw officers, not in my unit, you know, officers, Australian officers, British officers as well, with the Revolver Point, bringing troops back, run, try to get away. I remember going to our Sergeant Cook, Charlie Brown. He had lovely, all rows of food for the evening, you know. I said, Charlie, can I have some pineapple, please? He said, no, you have it tonight. But I never had it. When I got back that day, I was asked, that morning, you know, I was asked by our quartermaster, who was when he was normally dressed, he had a Sam Brown belt, you know, of the field ambulance. His name was Wood Higgs, and he's written a book about his experiences as a prisoner of war. He said, Jack, is it safe to go out? Now, why should he ask me if it was safe to go out? I didn't, you know. So I said, yeah, it's all right. It was his responsibility to get food, you see, for the hospital, you know, and the people who all the service personnel who are there. So they're on the Padang opposite, the 18-pounders were, 25-pounders were firing at the Japs. And I heard that three ambulances were going out to rescue wounded at the first cams with Captain Archie Barber, who I saw again last year in Perth, by the way, and I had a Christmas card from him this week, rather from his wife. So I tagged on. Nobody knew where we'd gone. And we go on the Dunearn Road. He'd heard that the wounded in the first cams, you see, the 18th Division consisted of the 3rd, 4th and 5th Norfolks, 4th and 5th Suffolks, the 1st and 2nd cams, and the Sherwood Foresters. They were the infantry, There was a reconnaissance corps, then there was artillery, you know, all engineers, all ancillary troops in the division. So I went out and I followed the ambulances. And when I stopped, Jock Turnbull got out, Jock Brown got out, and I was left there. I didn't know what to do. I had two... Was it finished?